on a Friday. It is Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. First up, Foxconn. $100 million in contracts were awarded this week to 28 subcontractors doing site development work for the Mount Pleasant facility. Meanwhile, Governor Scott Walker toured the state taking part in the Foxconn site development play-by-play. Here he is in Racine talking about the contracts for Foxconn.
The economic impact of both direct and indirect jobs just through phase one will be felt in 60 of the 72 counties here in the state of Wisconsin. So when we said we wanted Wisconsin first, a big hat tip to Foxconn and then all of you as partners for being a part of making that happen.
Do you work for one of the companies taking part in construction? Are you hoping to perhaps get a job at Foxconn or a business that grows up around it? Is Illinois right to threaten to sue the federal government for exempting Foxconn from smog controls? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in the roundtable now. Annalise Eicher is program director at partner organizations One Wisconsin Now and One Wisconsin Institute and a Dane County Board supervisor. Annalise, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we have Chris Lotto here, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. Chris, welcome back to you.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
So here we are with Foxconn. We have 28 subcontractors. 27 are in-state contractors for this site development work. Chris, let's start with you. What kind of ripple effects are you watching for in the state?
Sure. I think we're already starting to see them. I think with the announcement this week and Governor Walker's proclamation that this is going to benefit the vast majority of Wisconsin counties, I mean, I would take it a step further in that ultimately it benefits really the entire state when you're talking about the tax base, when you're talking about other businesses that might look to Wisconsin to locate a branch or to locate their business. These are all the kinds of things that will attract other businesses to come into the state. So really, that's a benefit to the entire state of Wisconsin. So this is really the start, I think, of a lot of good news that'll be coming about this project in the weeks and months ahead, a lot of this economic development. And this is a great start.
Annalise, what concerns you here as you see the subcontractor list, the 28 that came out?
Sure. Well, I think Foxconn, as far as who's it benefits, I mean, this is a $4.5 billion Wisconsin taxpayer subsidized benefit to Scott Walker and his campaign contributors. I mean, this is his reelection project. We did some digging into some campaign finance reports. And since 2010, we found that three of the top executives of Michaels Corp, where Walker has actually attended a couple events recently, have each donated at least $27,500 to Walker's campaign since 2010. So, I think it's important, to look at these subcontractors to see who of Walker's campaign contributors are benefiting from this this $4.5 billion reelection project of his.
Well, the governor dismissed this criticism, Chris, saying that this is the private company and that he's shocked if there was any construction company that hasn't supported him because he's done more to build the state than just about any past governor. Chris, is the governor right there?
Yeah. I mean, One Wisconsin Now, I don't think, is telling the whole story, including the fact that it's Foxconn making the decisions on who's going to be the subcontractors for this project, not the governor. His office has no direct involvement in that process. So, the idea that construction, which, gave to Governor Walker, is suddenly benefiting from this as a result is a bit disingenuous. As to the governor's point about, construction interests support him, well, he is, pro-development, pro-economic development, pro-business governor, similar to, the way construction money flowed to Tommy Thompson, for example, similar to the way that money from the East and West Coasts flow into Tammy Baldwin's campaign more than she gets from the state. It's those interests showing support for that individual candidate.
Annalise?
Well, I think it's funny that you mentioned the economics of this, because as Governor Walker, he's been governor for 8 years and is all, in most senses, an economic failure. He has gotten everything that he has wanted from the state legislature. We have had 75 straight months of private sector job growth in America under former President Obama. That was a record streak. And yet Wisconsin has continuously been mired in the bottom third of job creation nationally and near the bottom in the Midwest. And that is not economic prosperity, that is not jobs, that is economic failure for Governor Walker.
Well, let's also take a turn here on this Foxconn story this week, with Illinois Attorney General announcing plans to sue the Environmental Protection Agency, which exempted the area around Foxconn from the latest federal limits on smog. And the attorney general there, Lisa Madigan, says the federal government is putting profit over public health. But Governor Walker says Illinois may not be right here. Let's listen.
We've had in the past decade and a half dramatic drops in terms of pollutants here in the state of Wisconsin. And so our employers and our citizens are taking dramatic action. We haven't seen the same thing in the Chicago area. And so I think it might be worth us looking at a countersuit back.
So, Annalise, what do you make of the back and forth here?
Well, you know, I think a countersuit is pointless. And I would just like to give a big thank you to Attorney General Madigan from Illinois. The reality is that Foxconn could introduce a huge new source of pollutants in Wisconsin. And, you know, Brad Schimmel and Scott Walker, they can blame Illinois all they want for Wisconsin's air quality issues. But making it worse with Foxconn, it's not going to solve any of our problems. And so, you know, I applaud Attorney General Madigan from Illinois for, you know, taking action to protect Wisconsinites.
Chris, what are your sense about this potential lawsuit? Is this the right move for the environment, or is this a political stunt?
It's a political stunt. I mean, obviously, I mean, the Attorney General in Illinois is a Democrat. This has been reviewed by DNR. This has been reviewed by EPA. She's grandstanding. You know, the Chicago area and Illinois, that is the source of a great deal of pollution in Racine. So it's a little bit rich that they're going to now come to us and try to sue us and claim that we're causing their problems. That's just absurd.
So, Chris, what will you be watching for here? Do you think a suit will actually come about?
Probably. I mean, I would imagine. I think that scores points among, you know, her base with the Democrats. And, you know, if she's saying she's going to file a lawsuit, that wouldn't surprise me. But I also don't think that it's going to go very far.
Annalise, do you think that the issues over smog will continue to loom over Foxconn as it comes online?
Yeah, Kate, I really do. You know, there are... you know, the air quality issues in Wisconsin, you know, not just in the Racine area, are continually, you know, becoming an issue. And, you know, as I said, sure, Illinois has their own issues, but us adding Foxconn in Wisconsin and adding those potential new pollutants is not going to make anything better.
Well, Dave in Lancaster emailed, said, no one can make any true claims about a workplace until they themselves have to work there or live nearby it. So certainly proximity here is also playing into this storyline. Is that right, Chris?
I think so. I mean, I think that those are all things that are going to make a difference. And I think that you can't just... you know, hand the permits off to Foxconn and say, great, we're all done here. There has to be continual monitoring. We have to make sure that Foxconn is doing what they say they're going to do. And part of that is going to include, you know, monitoring the air, monitoring the water, monitoring around that site to make sure that they are honoring their commitments. And if not, one would hope that the state is going to take appropriate action.
Well, and I would just, you know, say to that, I mean, this is Scott Walker's DNR, and this is Pruitt's EPA, and, you know, monitoring things and regulation, you know, has not been their strong suit. So I'm a little wary of, you know, the whole process, given who's in charge.
Well, meanwhile, you say DNR. Deer farmers were concerned after the governor announced he was directing the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection to set emergency rules requiring double fencing at deer farms in counties where there have been positive chronic wasting disease tests. Other rules would ban the movement of live deer from farms in affected counties and bar hunters from moving carcasses from CWD-affected counties. So deer farming industry, they shot back this week that this would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And Governor Walker has since said that the rules are needed to increase confidence in the state herd. Chris, where do you stand on all this?
Yeah, I mean, deer hunting is such a deep Wisconsin tradition. And, you know, I think that the bottom line is that the state has to do whatever's necessary to ensure hunters both in-state and the many who come in from out-of-state to take part in our hunts in Wisconsin, you know, they need to know that CWD is under control and that the state is working to curb it. You know, that said, I did read in detail what some of the deer farms have been saying, and from what the way they're portraying it, you know, their margins are not huge and they can't afford these additions to their farms and are going to need help. And it sounds like Governor Walker heard that. I believe he's speaking before the Conservation Congress later today. So he may, address that issue in more detail, but it's clearly one that needs it because this is something that small businesses are going to have to pay the price for, and they're indicating that they can't handle it. So, you know, if Governor Walker, as a pro-growth governor, needs to, you know, step up and make sure that, if we're going to, create these new restrictions on deer farms and trying to reduce CWD in the state, you know, we have to help those deer farms get that job done.
Annalise, is it the role here of taxpayers to help out financially?
Well, you know, I think, you know, this is another one of Governor Walker's administrative fumbles. A lot of folks have been asking for action on this issue, on the issue of CWD in the state, because of our proud hunting tradition. They've been asking for years. And so a lot of folks are saying, you know, one, this is too little too late. But, you know, two, in reading this about this issue, and, you know, I myself, you know, was not as knowledgeable about this as I had been, among other things. But, you know, this really appears that this is just another issue that is important to our state, that affects our state, that Governor Walker is just simply not listening to the experts and is not working with those who are most effective to find an appropriate solution. It seems like he might get there, given some of the comments that he in the last day or two. But, you know, again, this is an issue that folks have been talking about for years. And, you know, in an election year, he's taking action to appease certain populations that he wants votes from.
And Chris Leto, following up on what you said, Governor Walker is speaking before the Conservation Congress today, and he said the discussion will center around what the group and hunters want to see the state do to slow the spread of the fatal deer disease.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, I'm a longtime deer hunter in Wisconsin, and as a former reporter, used to cover all those DNR meetings. And, you know, the whole idea of the hunt and how you regulate it and what areas of the state get to hunt, you know, longer, it's always been a contentious and very controversial issue. Hunters have always questioned, you know, the DNR's headcounts for deer and claiming that they're, you know, they're overcounting and or overestimating the population. So, I mean, this is... We've always had our fights over deer hunting in Wisconsin, and I think this is just sort of the latest round in that sort of ongoing simmering battle over how to regulate the hunt and the deer herd in this state.
Well, let's segue the conversation over to Senator Lena Taylor, a Milwaukee Democrat who is removed this week from the state's powerful Joint Finance Committee following an investigation into a dispute with one of her staff members. And another Milwaukee Democrat, Senator LaTanya Johnson, was her replacement. Chris, what is the best move in terms of making sure Milwaukee retains a seat at the table?
Well, I mean, I think they started by replacing Lena Taylor on Joint Finance. I mean, you know, the behavior that she appears to have engaged in and the fact that her own party saw fit to take her off of Joint Finance, I think, speaks volumes. And her calling this, I think she had a news conference this week where she referred to it as a political lynching I think that's a little gross. I think that, you know, she clearly has some issues with behaving like, to be charitable, kind of a bully and kind of a jerk. And the fact that one incident led to a criminal charge, the other led to her demotion in the legislature, you know, Lena Taylor might want to take a look in the mirror and think about how she's handling interpersonal relationships. But, you know, Milwaukee will, continue to have its seat at the table, at least on Joint Finance.
So she also, at this press conference, discussed this incident during a personal banking transaction in Milwaukee for which she was cited for disorderly conduct. And she says that she plans to remain in office and cited the difficulties of being a Black woman in a position of authority. Annalise, there's a lot to unpack here. What struck you about this situation?
You know, there is a lot to unpack there. And, you know, I don't know that Senator Taylor is wrong in pointing out that many individuals have problems with women, especially Black women, in positions of authority. And, you know, on the issue of the bank incident, I would question, well, how many white people have been cited for disorderly conduct and ticketed for being upset with customer service at a bank? I'm sure she's not the only person. And I'm not necessarily privy to the Senate caucus dynamics, and I know that folks are moved around all the time. And certainly Senator Taylor is not the first senator, I'm sure, to have conflicts with staff. It just so happens that Senator Schilling is taking action that other leaders have chosen not to in the past. Whether that's a good thing, sure. But I think at the end of the day, folks deserve to have a safe and productive work environment. And I think that the replacement of Senator Taylor with Senator LaTanya Johnson, mm-hmm. Ensures Milwaukee is represented. I mean, and back to folks being moved around. I mean, Representative Voss has moved, folks around committees, all the time for various behavioral issues, and it doesn't get nearly the coverage that this has. So I think we're working off a little bit of a double standard.
Chris Lotto, before we break, as a campaign consultant, I want to bring you into this particular aspect development this week. Former chairman of the Democratic Party, Matt Flynn, filing his nominating papers this week, submitting his signatures to get on the August 14th primary ballot. However, this comes during all this concern for him to drop out of the race because of his role representing the Milwaukee Archdiocese against lawsuits from victims of priest sex abuse. His response to those who wanted to stop his campaign was, "Jump in the lake." So what do you take away here from that response?
Well, it's a little callous, don't you think? I mean, he might want to tread a little more lightly. Well, look, first of all, Matt Flynn's not going to be the next governor of Wisconsin. Matt Flynn's not even going to be the Democratic nominee to become the governor of Wisconsin. So let's just get that out of the way. The fact is, in this sense, Matt Flynn is correct. The Archdiocese is obviously entitled to legal representation, and he is entitled to be among those attorneys. As voters, we're also entitled to take a look at that, see how he's handling it, and go, he's not the guy for me. And I have a feeling that most people are going to be doing that, and that Matt Flynn will be, watching the election returns at home on TV in November. But, I think that he would just want to, he can't run from it. It's obviously a sizable part of his resume. He was with the Archdiocese representing them for, I think, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that he can escape, and he has decided to lean into it and strike a rather, aggressive pose, which I don't think is a very good look.
Annalise, what's the effect going to be on his campaign, especially in such a crowded Democratic field?
Sure. Well, I think this is definitely an issue for the Flynn campaign, and it is something that he'll need to continue to address. The reality is that all of the candidates, including Scott Walker, are running on their records and what they've done, and they're going to need to be prepared to answer questions about their records and, be prepared to face voters about that.
You're with us on Week in Review. Our guests this week are Annalise Eicher. She's program director for One Wisconsin Now. Chris Lotto is a GOP campaign consultant, and you in the mix, 800-642-1234. What struck you about this week's primaries around the nation? What do you think we can learn from them for upcoming elections here in Wisconsin? You can call in 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back for more Week in Review in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You could say the 2018 midterm elections are officially underway, with four primary elections held Tuesday in Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, and North Carolina. In three of these states, West Virginia, Indiana, and Ohio, Republicans chose nominees who will challenge Democratic Senate incumbents later this year. Meanwhile, President Trump's support, or lack of it, may have factored into West Virginia's results. Here's former coal executive Don Blankenship, who called himself Trumpier than Trump in his concession speech.
I think if there was any single factor based on the polling at different times, the debate and all the things I saw, it was probably more likely President Trump's, lack of endorsement, I don't know what to call it, but don't vote for Don tweet. But then again, I can't justify that with any analysis or any actual numbers.
Before the election, Trump tweeted that Blankenship would be unable to defeat Democratic Senator Joe Manchin in November. What were your takeaways from Tuesday primaries? 800-642-1234. What do you think we can learn from the upcoming elections in Wisconsin? Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Annalise Eicher is here, Program Director at One Wisconsin Now. Chris Lotto as well, a GOP campaign consultant. Would love to get both of your takes here on Tuesday's primaries. So, Chris, what struck you about Tuesday?
I think the key result is the Blankenship race in West Virginia. Certainly, you know, looking at it from the Republican perspective, I mean, Democrats would have loved to have been handed the gift of another, you know, virtually unelectable candidate in the Roy Moore mold. Granted, they're accused of doing different things, but they both carry a steamer trunk of baggage that would be difficult to overcome. I'm glad I'm getting laughs. All right.
Such descriptive
words. Who'd have
thunk? You can tell you're a writer. Carry on.
But here's the thing, ultimately, and, you know, this is not just me taking a look at the map or anything, but, you know, Nate Silver has said this very recently. Politico has said this. Cook Political Report, among others. Democrats face a tough road ahead in the Senate. This November, they have to defend a lot more seats than normal, including a number of seats that are in, you know, areas that went very, very strongly for President Trump. Now, we all know President Trump has his own issues and that could turn some things. But, you know, the Democrats have to perform a Herculean task to take over the Senate. And in fact, a lot of these same pundits I named a moment or two ago, are saying that Democrats could actually lose a seat or two in November. So I think that's really the ultimate issue. I mean, the race has had some interesting stories, but I think when you look at the larger picture, it's going to be a tough one for Democrats to take back the Senate in November.
Annalise, what about you? Were you surprised about the role President Trump played here, especially in the loss of Don Blankenship in West Virginia?
Well, my biggest takeaway from, you know, those primaries were that 100% of Republican primaries were won by Republicans and 100% of Dem primaries were won by Dems. I don't know that there was necessarily a lot there. I mean, there was more turnout in the hardly contested West Virginia Dem primary than, you know, there was in the Republican. And, you know, other than that, I mean, the Dems got the candidates they wanted out of these races. And, you know, in North Carolina, there was a hardcore GOP congressman who was actually ousted by an even more hardcore, crazy GOP an individual. So, you know, there's, you know, looking at the bigger picture, I think looking at this fall, this wave is still coming. Folks are excited to vote for Democrats. Folks are excited to, you know, sort of bring this referendum on Trump and his policies and his way of governing. And I think that excitement is going to continue. There's a lot of great Dem candidates that a lot of the progressive voters across the country are excited to vote for.
Chris Lotto, what is President Trump's role here overall as you look at the impact of Tuesday's primaries and going forward as we get closer to the midterms?
I feel like it's kind of situational in a sense. I mean, I don't know how much Donald Trump's tweet at the last minute played a role in Blankenship. Maybe the West Virginia voters, I haven't seen any post, you know, election polling that would indicate that people had already made up their minds and the Trump thing was just, you know, throwing another log on the fire. I don't know that. I think it really is going to depend. I mean, in states where, you know, Hillary Clinton in 2016 didn't even get 40% of the vote, is that going to be a tough road for Democrats to hoe? I would say so. But there might be some situations, I think. And I think we're going to see it in a lot of House races where areas that might have supported Donald Trump a couple of years ago are going to go the other way this time. So there are going to be some areas where, Trump's style is going to cost some votes, cost some seats, cost some folks to think twice about the way they voted in 2016. But again, certainly in the Senate, it appears all indications are, and everybody looking at the numbers seems to think that it's going to be a tough one. There's no denying that I think in some states, in some races, you know, that a blue wave is coming. I mean, we've seen the indications. Governor Walker has said as much in Wisconsin after a special elections here. So, you know, people are watching it closely. And I think you, as a Republican, You can't take anything for granted this year. But, you know, beyond having, you know, a Donald Trump insert himself into your race, it is going to be, as Annalise said earlier, you know, it's up to the voters to decide. It's up to reviewing those records and saying, did you get done what you said you were going to do? And then vote accordingly. But, you know, I do think that ultimately it's just going to vary from state to state, from region to region, from race to race, how much the Trump factor plays a role.
Annalise, women continue to do well in this election season progress. What are you tracking there?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting that, you know, folks are, you know, looking to women candidates. I mean, there are a record number of women candidates running across Wisconsin, across the country. And, you know, I really, you know, some folks have said that, okay, well, it's the Trump effect. And sure. But, you know, I also think it's the effect of women deciding that, you know, they have ideas, they have skills, they have the resumes, they are, you know, the ones who can and should be running our government. And I think it's wonderful. You know, women are running and they're running strong campaigns, and then they're getting their names on the ballot and giving voters a choice that isn't the same old, same white men that are, you know, traditionally elected across the country.
So Tuesday being kind of this toe dip into the 2018 midterms in November, what do you think, both of you, what can we learn from these primaries about upcoming battles here in Wisconsin? What stage is set, Chris Lotto?
Well, I'm looking obviously at the Senate race. Tammy Baldwin's numbers right now are not good, but I do think that's a moment in time, and I think that, you know, that's what these polls are. It's a snapshot in time. She's got a number of months to turn things around. I mean, everybody remembers just a couple of years ago Ron Johnson's reelection. His numbers were underwater, and he turned it around. I think that Tammy Baldwin is, for example, going to be a more formidable candidate than people give her credit for, although I think we do have strong Republican challengers. The fact that Wisconsin went for Donald Trump in 2016, I'm sure, was a shocker to one Wisconsin Now and to Democrats. It certainly was a shocker to me. As somebody who used to work for the party, we hadn't won a statewide presidential since 84, since Ronald Reagan. So the fact that Trump carried it, I mean, we can relitigate and re-argue why that is. But I think that we've always been kind of an independent state. It's a little hard to call, you know, how things are going to go. I think at the statewide level, the margins for Republicans, certainly in the assembly, are so large that I think it's not going to change hands this year. I think Governor Walker knows that he certainly has a challenge on his hands when you look at this idea of a larger blue wave. But you have, what, 18 Democrat candidates? Nobody's really breaking out of the pack. I realize that there's still time for somebody to do that, but I'm wearing my partisan hat, but I'm not particularly blown away by any of them. I think they all come with baggage. I think the leader right now is Tony Evers, and I have a feeling that Scott Walker can make mincemeat of him. So, you know, it's hard to say, but I do think in Wisconsin, you know, the potential for a little bit of wow, we voted for Trump, we got to correct that may come, and you may see it in things like the Tammy Baldwin Senate race.
Yeah, Annalise, it sounds a bit of like a mixed bag that Chris Lotto is presenting here.
Sure. You know, and I will say a lot of us were surprised that Trump won Wisconsin. But I think the bigger tell here is that, you know, looking at the last couple of statewide races, Wisconsinites voted for progressives by huge margins. And, you know, looking at Senate race, Tammy Baldwin is running a campaign that is strong. She's got support all over the state.
She was back in Wisconsin last week.
Yeah,
talking about her mother's opioid.
Yes, she's rolling out a number of ads that are really hitting home with Wisconsinites. And, you know, the GOP candidates to challenge Tammy Baldwin, that primary is a bit of a mess. We've got Kevin Nicholson, who, you know, insists he's a Republican now, but can't seem to get his story straight, and, you know, has said some concerning things about our veterans. And Leah Vukmir, who, you know, has just been a state senator, who, you know, has taken to throwing some jabs to get some media attention. So, you know, I think Tammy Baldwin is in a really great position. I think Wisconsin is in a great position to elect some progressives. You know, there are people stepping up all over the state to run for state senate, to run for state assembly, and they're going to put up numbers. I mean, I think we saw it in the Rebecca Dallet race that, you know, these counties that voted for Trump, who then turned around and voted for Rebecca Dallet, you know, in 10 plus more points, there are a number of them. And if the, you know, Republicans do end up holding onto some seats, I think we can look to our heavily gerrymandered maps as to the reasons that they, you know, continue to hold on to seats because the voters aren't able to choose who they are voting for.
Well, Chris Lotto, as the Republicans round up in a convention this weekend, conference this weekend, are there going to be some heart-to-hearts going on here?
Oh, for sure. I think the Supreme Court race, Annalise raised a good point there. I think that's one of those where you go, whoa, we did not see that coming. And I think that was the real shocker for the party that made them sit up and say, okay, we've got a real fight on our hands and we can't take this for granted. And I think Governor Walker has publicly said that things can't be taken for granted. So certainly I think he has to have some concerns about, you know, where his election and his race are going. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, the conventions are a way to fire up the troops and get the ground troops going and the grassroots, getting them ready for the work to come. I think there are certainly encouraging signs. I think, again, you know, the Ron Johnson victory of a couple of years ago, I do think that certainly for Republicans and firing them up, things like the Foxconn deal and seeing the economic development continuing to happen for Wisconsin are the kinds of things that are going to get the grassroots activists fired up. And I think, too, that Democrats in general are kind of overreaching and overplaying their hand on their message. And I think they're, you know, while the blue wave appears to be forming and is certainly going to take some Republicans down, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they may be thinking that wave is a little larger than it really is. And you know, this is a great chance for Republicans to kind of regroup, look at the things that they did wrong and realize that, you know, these races are won on the ground and organization has to be there. Obviously, the candidates are critically important and they have to be, you know, right on the issues for Republicans. But, you know, really these races are won by, you know, knocking on doors, organizing neighborhoods, organizing districts. And that's where the Republicans have to, you know, be focused on come this mm-hmm. November. And I think that, you know, they'll be able to mitigate the blue wave if they're doing that.
One development at a time. We're working through the week and the complexities with two political perspectives. This week's Week in Review is Chris Lotto, who is a GOP campaign consultant, and Annalise Eicher here is program director at One Wisconsin Now. You can weigh in on diplomatic developments with the North Korea, with the Iran nuclear deal, questioning of CIA nominee Gina Haspel. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Should President Trump have pulled out the U.S. out of the Iran deal? Was this the right move by the president, or are you concerned about what this means about our role on the world stage? What do you make of the set meeting between President Trump and North Korea leader Kim Jong-un? What are you watching for? 800-642-1234, email ideas@wpr.org. We'll get back to the discussion in just a moment on the Ideas Network. On a Friday, you're with us for Week in Review. Annalise Eicher is here. She's the program director at One Wisconsin Now. Chris Lotto here as well, GOP campaign consultant. And your thoughts at 800-642-1234. President Trump welcomed home three American prisoners from North Korea this week, citing their release as a proof of his diplomacy.
Set, and we will see if we can do something that
dark of the night. There, hours later, the president announced that a summit was planned between him and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on June 12th in Singapore. Getting your thoughts, what are you watching for between President Trump and North Korea's leader? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's first dive into the Iran nuclear deal. And Chris, President Trump said this week that the U.S. is pulling out of the international deal with Iran. He also announced that economic sanctions against Tehran will be reinstated, criticized the past as weak and insane. So what do you think of this?
I think it's the president, before he was elected, said this was a bad deal, and he's following through on what he said during the campaign. So nobody should be surprised by this, first of all. Was it a bad deal? Yeah, it is. I mean, and President Trump did the right thing. You know, the Obama administration's idea for this deal was to give Iran $1.7 billion in cash, which has undoubtedly helped Iran kind of fund their aggressive actions in the region. We have no way to actually inspect the military sites to make sure that their nuclear efforts have stopped. At worst, they've been delayed, or rather, at best, I should say. And, you know, really, the Obama-era idea of foreign policy is crystallized in this agreement, which is you kiss the ring of these regimes, and then you kick the can down the road for somebody else to deal with. And I think that doesn't do us any favors. And also, this wasn't even a formal treaty. John Kerry, you know, and the president, they didn't want to have to deal with the Senate on this, so they just basically circumvented them and didn't get the formal, you know, agreement and approval of the Senate. So it's not even, you know, a formal treaty in that sense. They ignored the rule of law in getting this done. So all that said, it is now incumbent upon the Trump administration to come up with a better alternative. And that's where, you know, the rubber meets the road, to use that hoary cliche. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, you know, our allies need to come to the realization that this deal didn't do much to deter Iran. The U.S. is calling them out now. The economic sanctions brought Tehran to the negotiating table before, and it almost undoubtedly will do that again. So it is really up to the administration now to figure out a path forward. But this is something he said he was going to do all along. He did it, and it was a good move.
But Chris, how do you see this being played out or perceived by President Trump's base?
Trump's base is going to support it. I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, Trump's base, this is what he said he was going to do. I think that by and large, Republicans and conservatives are on the same page that this was not a good deal. The Obama administration did not handle this in an above board way by running it past the Senate. They just circumvented the Senate for whatever reason, because, you know, perhaps they knew it wasn't a great deal. But I think this plays well with the base. I think this is an example of a politician saying something during the campaign and then doing it once he was elected.
Annalise?
Well, I think this is one of the few things that Trump said that he was going to do during the campaign that he is actually following through on. But honestly, this seems like he's simply trying to undo anything that President Obama did. And you know, the reality is he's reneged on a promise that was made by the United States, and it's just another reason that our allies in Europe and our other allies around the world have a problem with trusting the United States. And, you know, I think this is, you know, potentially a cautionary tale. I mean, look at Iraq, Afghanistan, you know, all of our involvement in the Middle East. You know, I think we need to, you know, tread cautiously here. And, you know, you know, involvement from the Senate or not, you know, I think the reality is that the GOP was the ones who put us down this path. I mean, we've got two wars. We've got an Iraq who is full of extremists. And now we're looking at this deal in Iran that is, you know, everyone else seems to be on board with it except the United States.
Well, can I follow up on one point that Annalise made? Because I think it's important, and it goes back to what we were saying about President Obama and John Kerry and how they got this deal done. The fact is that it would be a lot harder for Trump and the administration to get out of this deal had the Obama administration gone through the Senate in the first place and gotten this formally ratified as a treaty. So that's on them.
Well, and going through the, what, obstructionist GOP Senate literally obstructed
every single
thing.
Well, look, it was a bad deal, and that is...
Every single thing that President Obama tried to do. you know, particularly in the last 4 years of his presidency. It was obstruction after obstruction after obstruction. I think he took the initiative and got this deal done. And now we have allies around the world who are no longer trusting us because we make deals like this and then pull out of them.
We have an administration that disagrees with the way the Obama administration handled this and the substance of the deal and stepped out of it accordingly. And that is within their rights. Had they handled this differently, had they handled this with the involvement of the Senate and worked on a deal that everybody could agree upon, they just took the easy way out so they could claim a quick victory.
Well, let's look at another space on the world stage here. It is the announcement of the meeting between the President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, June 12th, Singapore. He also this week welcomed home three American citizens who have been detained for more than a year in the past few days. Carrie in Northern Illinois joins us now with thoughts on this. Carrie, go ahead.
Hi, I'm just a little skeptical of, well, I'm very skeptical of the union between North Korea and the United States. Kim Jong-un was not originally meant to be the leader of the country, and I think that he was picked either because he shared his grandfather's ideals or because he was easy to manipulate. I'm not sure, but he wasn't the first one in line, and just the way that he has punished those around him, like when he fed his uncle to the dogs and when he, you know, poisoned his older brother. And these kinds of actions are not the actions of someone who I think can be a leader and be peaceful with another country, especially with a country that the whole country, that North Korea is all brought up to see the United States as, you know, a horrible enemy, and they're taught to hate the United States from the time that they're born.
So Carrie, I'm going to interject here. Carrie, all of this comes as these two men meet in Singapore. Chris Lotto, there is all of this backstory, as Carrie is saying, that we have as we go meet with North Korea.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what Carrie's saying. I mean, she's expressing concern and skepticism, and I think we all are. I think that the fact that these two are talking is I think going to be a good thing. I don't think this is a bad thing. This is the kind of thing that, you know, just because North Korea and Kim Jong-un, you know, is a bully and you know, the past hatred of America does not mean we shouldn't try to talk and try to figure out a way forward. I would think that setting aside any animosity you have toward President Trump, I would think you'd want this to succeed. This is a good thing for the U.S. It could ultimately be a good thing for North Korea, and it could be ultimately a good thing for the geopolitical landscape. So you should be, you know, cheering for this and want to see something happen successfully. But I do understand, you know, the administration, President Trump, really have to be on their toes because we have this long history where, North Korea and Kim Jong-un don't think very highly of the U.S. So we have to go in with eyes wide open.
So, Annalise, should we be cheering for this meeting?
I'm going to hold my breath on that. I agree with our caller in that, you know, I am skeptical, particularly because only a few months ago, Trump and Kim Jong-un were trading insults on Twitter, and not very nice insults either. And, you know, so I'm going to hold my breath on that. I will say it's absolutely wonderful that the Americans who were detained have been able to return home. I do think it was a little distasteful that during the meeting with these former hostages that Trump decided to talk about TV ratings, instead of speaking about their experiences and welcoming them home and really thinking about, you know, what this means for our relationship with North Korea. But, you know, I'm skeptical about the meeting. I'm going to hold my breath to see what comes out of that and if it even happens.
Well, also this week, senators questioned Gina Haspel, the nominee being considered to lead the CAA after the departure of Mike Pompeo to the State Department. And Senator John McCain of Arizona has urged rejection of her nomination, pointing to her role overseeing the use of torture by Americans. And when asked, though, about a statement by the president in which he said the torture, quote, absolutely works, Haspel told senators that She doesn't believe that torture works. And so there's scrutiny here over her role in interrogation. Chris, what are you making of the line of questioning on Gina Haspel?
Well, I mean, first of all, we were just talking a little while ago about female candidates and how important that is. And we have the chance now to have the first female director of the CIA. So that in itself should be significant. You know, if we're watching this to make sure that the genders are getting closer to equal representation, then Gina Haspel as our CIA director should be great news. Beyond that, she's highly qualified. She has decades of experience in the CIA. The Democrats that are out there now puffing their chests over her involvement in what was deemed to be illegal at the time. It's really more about trying to stick it to Trump than anything else. Obama's former CIA director, John Brennan, he was also heavily involved in the program of enhanced interrogation. He was confirmed by a near 2-to-1 margin. Brennan, Leon Panetta are among the Obama era intelligence officials who say it's time to support Gina Haspel for CIA chief, and it's time to it's time to confirm her.
Well, Annalise, a supporter of Haspel's in the Trump White House reportedly called McCain's comments, quote, irrelevant because he's dying. And the White House did not dispute that remark attributed to a special assistant to the president. But in a statement said, we respect Senator McCain's service to our nation, and he and his family are in our prayers during this difficult time. So there's a lot of push and pull going on here about this nomination. What are your insights?
Well, I think it was really unfortunate that the White House aide made that comment. Senator McCain has served the country in multiple ways and, has a very, personal perspective on torture and how that works within our systems. As for Haspel's nomination to the CIA, I think that participation in torture that we know does not work, and then covering it up by destroying evidence at the behest of one of her supervisors is absolutely disqualifying when it comes to being the director of the CIA.
What about Chris Lotto bringing up that she would be the first woman in this role?
Having a woman as the head of the CIA would be wonderful, but I think we need, as with any candidate for any position, the most qualified person. And as I said, I think that participation in torture and covering it up and destroying evidence is an automatic disqualification.
Chris Lotto, will she be appointed or is it too soon to tell?
I think we're leaning toward yes. It appears to be something that's going to happen at this point.
How about you, Annalise? Do you think that she'll get through?
That's a great question. I do hope that folks who will be voting on this will actually take a closer and harder look at her record and at her history and really take that into consideration. But at the same time, the Senate seems to be approving just about anything and anyone that Trump puts forward.
Well, we'll leave it there. Annalise and Chris, thank you so much for coming in.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
That was Annalise Eicher. She's program director at partner organizations One Wisconsin Now and One Wisconsin Institute and a Dane County Board supervisor. Chris Lotto here in the studio as well, former communications director for the Republican Party of Wisconsin and a GOP campaign consultant. This edition of Wisconsin Weekend was produced by Brianne Chasso. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network. Have a great weekend. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Thanks for listening.